This is the Mobile Tech Podcast, brought to you by worldpodcasts.com. Now here's your host, Tech Girl Miriam Joie.
Hi, and welcome to the Mobile Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Miriam Joie, and it is the week of Monday, May 22nd, 2017. I have a very special guest with me today, and that is the awesome Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile himself. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Miriam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have you. This is exciting. You're episode 2 of this series. I've done many, many more podcasts, as you well know.
I know. I was on a couple of them, I think.
I know, exactly. You're always a delightful guest to have because, like me, you have many phones in your pockets at all times.
Oh, yeah. No such thing as too many phones in the
pockets.
Correct,
right? I know.
Yeah.
So the question I have for you, I think that was kind of the first thing on the agenda, was Google I/O. We were both there last week.
Yeah, I feel like I just saw you like 2 days ago.
You did.
Because I did.
You did. Yeah, I just kind of want to have your thoughts on it. I mean, I'm not going to go through every piece of news, but like, what do you think stood out and got you excited as Mr. Mobile?
Yeah, you know, it's a weird show because this seemed to be the year where a bunch of people who were there decided to write about how it was sort of boring, how I/O was no longer this gadget carnival full of novelties, but it was in fact a developers conference, and some people reacted. You know, there was a whole spectrum of reaction to that.
You don't say a developer conference.
I know, crazy, I know. Right? So I had to resist the urge initially to be like, after the keynote, to be really disappointed that we weren't seeing basically any new hardware, which is my thing. You know, I want something to touch and play with, right?
I want the hardware. Yeah. That's what we go to these things for. You know, Microsoft at Build did not hand out anything.
Right.
And I'm not mad at them. That's not what I really go for, but I was really hoping we'd get something like one of those new HP speakers with Cortana or something, right?
Yeah, like, and you know, you don't go for the free stuff, like you say, but you go to use the new thing. Like, I think last year's I/O, they at least had the new Android Wear release, so you could go try it on demo devices on site. But this year there wasn't any of that, but there was an awful lot of, here's what's coming and here's why it's going to be cool. And I think the thing that probably sticks in my head the most is the, it's a tie between the Google Home stuff and the Google Lens stuff, the new advancements to photos.
Dude, totally. Like, I'm absolutely on board with you. I think those are the two exciting things. Disclosure, they gave us all a Google Home. Which I'm excited about because I didn't actually have a review unit yet. Somehow that did not land in my inbox last year. Weird, huh? Because, I mean, they tried to send me a Dreamcast. See, this is my video game days coming out. they tried to send me a Daydream VR headset, but I was out of town and they shipped it to me and it got sent back.
With
Google, when it gets sent back to them, they it doesn't get back to their PR people. It gets back to some kind of like refurnishing, like replenishing mail service, and they don't get it back for another month, right? Oh. So they're like, sorry, we don't have any more to send you. And I'm like, oh. And then, you know, I didn't persist. And she didn't persist. And then she didn't have one, basically.
Yep, that happens. I know. I just missed a whole shipment of battery packs for that same reason. Not from Google, but So it was exciting to get them.
Google Home, I mean, Google Assistant. Like, what is your take? What did they say that they were adding? Because I can't really remember. Other than Google Lens, which I want to talk about separately, what did you get excited about with the Assistant?
So Google Assistant, I keep forgetting, but they're bringing it to the iPhone, which is a very exciting move.
Deal.
If you if you don't carry an Android phone around and you want access to a virtual assistant who is somewhat, I think, significantly more capable than Siri. That's huge news. And it's huge news for Google too, right? Because they get access to a whole new swath of users whose data will be very helpful to them. So there's that. And then there's the release of the APIs, or the expansion of the APIs that allow you to, if you're a restaurant, say, give users access to ordering to go just by talking to Google Assistant. I guess Panera was the example they gave there. And
that was pretty cool, right?
It was cool. I wish everyone thinks I hate Panera now because my Google I/O video, I was like, well, it's cool, but it won't make their croutons edible. But it's just about the croutons. It's the rest of their food is actually.
This I think is going to be the title of the episode. It's all about the croutons.
It's all about the croutons. Yeah.
Look, I think you're right, cool, though. Right? I mean, Panera is a mainstream example. That's cool, but it didn't really get me super excited until my kind of local, you know, little restaurant lets me do that with them. That's going to be when it's exciting to me. Like right now,
be tremendous.
When you use apps like Caviar and other apps right today to order to go, I want that in Google Home. Like I want, it to interface with Caviar automatically.
Is Caviar like your version of Foodler or Eat24 or Dash?
It's one of them. It's one of the kind of more fancy ones here in the Bay Area.
Oh, very nice. Because I'm East Coast, I'm in Boston. I've only got two.
I wouldn't say it's fancy, but it's definitely the seems more popular with the kind of restaurants that do takeout in SF, right? So it's also at a slightly higher price point. It's not like Panera, pretty mainstream. But it's not like
fancy dinner takeout.
Right, it's not going to be like oh my god, super expensive. But it's going to be normal San Francisco, slightly more expensive prices. So, you know, the service goes along with that. Yeah, the bottom line is,
it would be rad to be able to plug that into, you know, all these services, just to be able to be like, okay, I want to order from the place around the corner, and I want to order this, and I want it here as soon as possible, and then just have assistant take care of that.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. For me, it's like every time I see, you know, a cool tech demo that involves anything with a mainstream brand like, you know, Nike or Pizza Hut or whatever, I'm like, I am not a customer, right? Like, I would rather you interface with service providers that give me access to multiple choice. For me, it's about choice, right? It's like
totally.
Nike, well, I have nothing against them. In fact, I own a house in Portland, Oregon, so Nike's based there. I should love them, in fact, because they probably employ a lot of people up there. But the point is that I'd rather have a service that lets me buy sneakers. You know what I'm saying?
Rather than any brand you want.
Than a place that lets me buy just Nike stuff.
Right.
The bottom line is, I think for me, Google Home right now, obviously I haven't tried the device I have, but I've used the Google Assistant on my Pixel XL, and I love it. I think it's the best assistant, but at the same time, it's really still limited. Like, there's a lot of stuff it doesn't do, it doesn't understand. It seems to me like it's not evolving fast enough, AI. I mean, in general. Do you feel that way too?
Yeah, I do. And it also bears the hallmark of this Google inconsistency that sort of plagues a lot of Google products, where you have on the same phone, you can tap the microphone icon on Google Now to identify a song that's playing. But on that exact same phone, you fire up Google Assistant, you ask it to identify a song, and it's like, oh, I can't do that yet. And,
I know.
You know, there's a couple of those examples. Like, I think there's Google Home still can't do reminders or something like that, or it couldn't until very recently. So you have the same brand, Google Assistant, across multiple platforms, and it doesn't behave the same. And that can be hugely frustrating if you're not a nerd like us who's like, oh, yeah, that's just Google being Google, you know?
Yeah, and that's my problem. Like, I bought an Echo Dot recently.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I got one of those too.
Well, it's okay, but, you know, honestly, I don't have much use for it other than, like, what's the weather and, you know, give me the news and, you know, set an alarm sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the problem with Play Store for Music, I have very little in the Amazon ecosystem in terms of music. Most of it lives in Google Play Music for me. So I think that's why Google Home might be better for me.
Oh. Well, yeah. And to begin with, the Google Home speaker is a lot better than the Dots. But also, I don't have anything in Amazon in terms of music. I just have the Spotify skill attached.
That works.
So I just tell it to play something on Spotify and boom.
Got it. Yeah, I think for me, Alexa, I kind of bought it because I'm one of my clients I haven't worked with them in a few months now, but was Almond, the router company, and their home automation product, right? So you can control Almond with Alexa by telling Alexa to talk to Almond, and then Almond will do whatever, like turn on the lights, you know, do all kinds of things that are home automation-y. Home automation-y? That's a new word I just made up.
Automation-esque, yeah.
Thank you. I like that. And so, but the problem is it's really cumbersome, right? You end up having to say things like, I'm probably going to do that right now. It's not going to work because my Alexa is right next to me. But I'll say something like, Alexa, tell Almond to activate the goodnight scene. And that's how you basically tell it to turn off the lights.
Right,
which
is
kind of like heavy-handed, right?
Thing.
And
yeah.
If you don't enunciate properly and you're sitting far away, I'm purposely enunciating better now, mm-hmm. you will not get an action. It just won't work.
Right, and
that,
conversely,
to me is a frustration.
Yeah, it is, and the opposite problem exists too. Still, you know, you have these key phrases that get triggered even because mine is computer. I took off the Hey Alexa or whatever.
I
so,
like that.
Yeah, you know, I'm a Star Trek nerd. So
no, I know.
But anytime
that's
they
why
say,
we love you, Michael.
Thank you. Anytime they say on, you know, NPR will be doing a story on, you know, computers, and literally every time they say the word computer, the echo wakes up for a second. It's like, oh, is that my wake word? Oh, no, it's not. Okay, and then it dumps me back into the feed. But, you know, that's they're ironing that out. I think we've come a long way since the first mainstream or widely purchased or widely sold wake word enabled product in my beat, at least, which was the Moto X in 2013.
You're
remember
right.
when they shipped it
oh,
with
yeah.
the Moto Voice and you could be like, hello, computer.
I know.
Or
it
whatever
was,
you wanted. It was
it
great.
Was cool. But because it couldn't do anything, I didn't use it, right?
I could do stuff. It just took forever.
that's my point. It was very early adopter E.
Yeah.
But I hear you, and I think that you know, that's my problem. I mean, Theo and I, my spouse, we sat here the other day in the office where we have the Alexa, so the Echo Dot, and you know, he's an iPhone user, I'm an Android user, so he had Siri going and I had Assistant, and we made them compete, right? I mean, I don't mean by like having them talk to each other, but more like we would ask the same queries, and they're all really, really broken. Like, I mean, they're all really not doing what they're supposed to do. Now, I would give the advantage to Assistant, definitely, because I've got a lot of my data in the Google ecosystem. Like, it sees everything that I do.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, it just, you know, needs some improvement, right? Like, I think, and Alexa for me, as I said, it's very useful for my home automation control at this point, but nothing really else. And I'm certainly not going to enable ordering. Not because it's a problem here in SF, but it's in my home in Portland. It's in my living room. And, you know, I have roommates. And the last thing I know is I don't want my roommates starting to order candy or something. You know, not that they would, but I just, you know, it's weird
right,
to
but
me.
Yeah, no, there's no reason not to. There's no reason to just keep that wide open. But and I think for the second year in a row, this I/O was about Google basically saying, help us correct these problems that you were just talking about. Help us
correct.
Fix these limitations by feeding our machine learning algorithms more data, by using more of these cool services that, you know, to be fair, are really, really cool. Like
I agree. I think,
you know,
the trick is that, you know, we need more. Like, I think the problem is, it's like we're in a kind of weird, what's the word? We're in a weird kind of, like, Twilight Zone in a way with the assistants, because I think what's happening is Alexa is like the most popular and well-known one,
mm-hmm.
but Google's got the best AI and Siri's got the best penetration.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and
like,
certainly
there are
more
iPhone
most
users, more people are familiar with what Alexa does, yet at the same time, Google's got the best AI. So the result is that none of them are good, right?
Right.
And it's going to stay like that until one becomes prominent. And I hate to say this, but no matter how much Google love it, you know, gives to developers for the assistant, I don't think the assistant will ever be as popular, at least in the next year or two, as Alexa.
Alexa. Wow, really? Okay.
Well, yeah, because I think it's like Alexa is in like the average home of the average American, whereas assistant is, you know, I don't know many people that use Android that use the assistant. You and I are like, we are the tech nerds. We, of course, use the assistant because we're total Android users, right? And
right.
we've invested years of our time and energy into putting our data in Google. My Google has my calendar dating back from 10 years.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
It, you know, it has all my contacts. It has all my emails. It knows my flights. It knows, you know, it knows everything.
Sure, but I think, you know,
and Alexa knows nothing. Like, I linked up my calendars, and that's it.
But think about all the points that at which Google can position itself to be in the face of the regular consumer. You know, Alexa lives in your home, and it's a good product in its various ways, but it's limited, right? It's just that thing that lives in your house. Whereas, like you're saying, Google has all this data about, and not just tech nerds. I mean, people, my normal friends were starting to get Gmail addresses 10 years ago. So Google has all this stuff. It has all this knowledge.
Yeah, but
it
are they really using their Gmail addresses? Because the problem is this. A lot of people I talk to are afraid. They're like, I don't like the fact that Google knows so much about me or Facebook.
Sure.
So they're comfortable with Alexa too. Because Alexa only knows about their shopping and their music listening maybe, and that's it, right?
See, I think that is something that actually that consciousness is more prevalent in tech nerd circles than I do. Well, at least that's my experience. This is all anecdotal stuff
for me, right?
But for me, almost all of my friends from outside the tech world are on Facebook and don't talk about the privacy issues, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It kind of doesn't register for a lot of them. And I think the same probably is true of Google. And so you have Google with all of these points at which it can position itself, like phone, desktop, the convertible stuff, the TV, now Google Home. And I think Assistant is much better positioned than either Siri or Alexa to really make some inroads.
I agree, as long as people are willing to give you data. Because as I said, for me, when I talk to my non-tech friends, like the average Facebook user,
mm-hmm.
which is ironic, I know, because they already give so much data to Facebook. But when I describe how Google Assistant does stuff for me, they're creeped out.
what's the most creepy they... I mean, what creeps
like,
them
how,
out the
like,
most?
I don't know. I guess the fact that it knows stuff or whatever, like that it knows mm-hmm. what my flight is, that it presents my boarding pass when I get closer to my flight.
Really?
Like things that I find really useful that like this creeps me out. It should know like why does it know all this stuff and it shouldn't know all this stuff. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. That's exactly what makes it awesome.
You know, I am totally with you in that specific example or the Google Now feed tailoring itself to give me, dinner recommendations when I'm at a particular place. I think all that stuff is great and it doesn't bother me in the slightest. But I understand the roots of that concern because I'm setting up the Google Home basically as we speak. Like when I get done talking to you, I'm going to go set up the Google Home in the studio. But even though I know that Google says it records in a 90-second loop and continually overwrites itself or whatever and doesn't send anything to the cloud until it hears the key phrase, and even then it's only relevant to what you're asking, even though I know all that, I still have to get over this fear, really, of having this thing in a room listening to me all the time.
But your phone is already doing that.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. But you don't really think about that anymore.
It's true.
You know, because that's sort of been the case for a long time. And I think a lot of people don't think about that at all. I think a lot of people don't realize that at all.
Right, I know.
But this thing, Google Home sits there and reminds you just by its presence on the table, like, oh, yeah, there's that thing that's listening to see if I want it. And like I say, I already said all the qualifying stuff, you know, I get it, but it is still weird. And when you have even the barest hint of that self-censorship creeping in, it starts to feel like a really weird world to live in. Cause I'm
totally.
Like, oh wow, I'm putting on my best self for this device, you know?
For sure. I think it'd be interesting to see how it pans out. And I think that, you know, honestly, you're right. Everybody's got a different take on this. And I think we're potentially from a generation that's a little more sensitive to it, right? Because we're old and cranky. Get off my lawn, right?
Oh, my God. My shoulder is literally in pain right now because of how much dancing I did in Mountain View.
See, there you go.
That's how old I am, Miriam. I feel you.
We're both very old, like 400 years or so.
What are we doing?
And so it makes us cranky, trust us. But the thing is that, different demographics are, and I just generally get the feeling that Alexa is more welcome in more homes and more understood and trusted at this point. And I might be wrong, but that's why I'm worried about, despite Google having better AI, that they're going to lag behind and I'm not sure they can catch up in popularity. And then Siri is kind of useless.
Yeah.
I hate to say this, a lot of Apple zealots disagree with me, but the average Apple person I talk to, including my spouse, for example, Theo, says he never uses it. I basically uses it to set timers, and I do the same with Google Assistant.
Clocks,
I hate to say that, but Google Assistant is my timer best friend right now.
Totally.
So,
can I ask you, speaking of kind of dovetailing with that we're old and Google Home versus Alexa thing, what do you think about the calling, the free calling to any phone number through Google Home? Do you think that's going to give it a leg up over on Alexa?
Yeah, I mean, it could, although that Alexa just introduced that visual camera-based thing that lets, like, old people video conference without Skype, basically.
Right.
It's like the video phone of 2001 A Space Odyssey, finally in our homes at an affordable price point.
Uh-huh.
But my take...
But that's only to other Alexas, right?
Yeah, I know. But the thing that I don't understand about the Google implementation is, does it use your own cell phone number or does it use Google Voice? Because that's exactly the same problem as we've always had with Google Voice. I could never make it my main number for a number of reasons. And now I use it as an accessory, not as a main thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I use my the number I give away on my business card is my Google Voice, so I can filter calls, especially from people who pitch me. All my friends like you have my real number. All the institutions I deal with, my bank, et cetera, have my real number. But my real number is a T-Mobile cellular number, and I've had it since the VoiceStream days. It was actually ported from Sprint to VoiceStream in 99 or something.
Before, oh my god! Yeah, I was going to say it had to be before 2004.
I was Sprint for a year basically. Like I'd only chose a 1 year contract, and then at the time I was living, spending my time halfway between not halfway, but like back and forth between Seattle and Vancouver, BC. So when I needed, I couldn't really roam. It was so expensive to roam from Canada in the US. So I got a local number in the US with a local cell phone. 1 year plan, and then eventually I ported that to VoiceStream, and then I moved to the US permanently, and because VoiceStream became Timo, and the rest is history, as they say. But the point is that the Google Voice number I have is phenomenal. I use it you know, my main number goes to Google Voice for voicemail when people call me and I can pick up. So I've got it configured to do that. And I've got it configured to do international calls through Google Voice because it's way cheaper. Still, even though Timo is pretty cheap. In fact, Timo is free to, I mean, they don't charge you extra to call Canada and Mexico now, which is pretty awesome. Not Mexico, because I don't have family there, but Canada. But I suppose that a lot of Americans who have relatives in Mexico, so I think they're very happy about that.
So
I use it, definitely do. I wouldn't want to give up my Google Voice, but it's not my main number. And so my question is, if I use Google Home and I say, call, you know, my friend, they're going to see a number they don't recognize.
Probably, but I think you can probably configure that, right? It's like trivial now to be able to spoof an outbound caller ID
for
convenience's sake.
But I'm not sure if T-Mobile would be too happy with Google Home spoofing my phone number.
I know, but you know, I'm not sure because I'm coming from the opposite position.
My Google Voice number has been
my primary number since 2008 or something. Yeah. So
how did you deal with Project Fi then?
I did not. My Project Fi number is a separate number, and I never integrated them because I was terrified of losing all the desktop functionality.
So because of that, I have three. I have a Fi number in addition to that.
Yeah,
God
exactly.
Damn it.
Right?
Sorry.
There's no escaping it. There's just,
I know.
You know, but it's
a
great
nightmare.
Because then it's an excuse to carry three phones, and that's a lot of fun.
Oh, you're right. So... there are a number of segues that happen here. One was when you talked about Alexa, and we talked about Alexa. I want to just, as an aside, mention that we talked about the HTC U11 last week with Richard Lai, and I wanted to talk to you about it today as well. But one of the things I never mentioned, both in my hands-on and that I did with Andrew Martonic's phone, which you did a hands-on at Google I/O as well, right?
And that was the same device too.
My video was way worse because I did it live and the bandwidth was crap and it looks like crap now.
That was cool. I was standing 4 feet away. It looked good.
It looked cool, but it didn't come out that great. Your videos are always masterpieces, so.
Oh, thanks.
I feel like a complete amateur, but hey, the point is that Alexa is supported.
I was thinking about doing it. Yeah,
Alexa is supported by the UE11, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, listen, Alexa's talking back at me.
Oh, I knew that was going to happen.
It's supported by the UE11, right? It's not, doesn't just do, it has the keyword for Alexa in there.
Right, which is like, that's how HTC is just barely one-upping Huawei, right? Because Huawei on the Mate 9 has, or will have Alexa, but it's only a button triggered or something like that.
Right.
I don't think it has the, key phrase.
And the second segue was when you said the phones that are in our pockets. We're going to get to that in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tie all together and talk quickly about Google Lens because we mentioned it and people might not know what it is. Do you want, in your words, to explain what it is if you think you can?
Yeah, watch out for me here, though, because it's tricky. There's a blurry line between lens and photos. Like, lens is a part of photos or
for
something.
Now.
Yeah. So if you remember Google Glass, not Google Glass, Google
Goggles.
Oh, I
do remember Google Glass.
It sounds to me like Google Lens is sort of Google Goggles on steroids. And
it
the
is.
New features that they demoed were very, very, very demo-friendly. Point your phone at a concert marquee, you know, the marquee above your favorite concert venue, and not only will it put it in your calendar, the band and the date and the time, but it will offer you a link to buy tickets if it can find a place for you to get tickets. Point your phone at a flower, and it'll tell you what kind of flower you're looking at. What was the other one? What's the other that they did? It wasn't a person identifier. It was like
The serial number on the back of your router.
Yes,
it brings up your Wi-Fi.
The freaking best one. Because
that's a total nerd
true.
Thing, though, right?
It is. But every time I go back to my father's house,
me too.
He's got one of that sticker, and I'm like, he's got the really long password, and I'm like,
yes.
Oh, that would be perfect.
Every time I go to my mom's house in France, it's
yes.
the same freaking story.
It's just the greatest. So there's all that stuff that's, you know, just making the camera smarter, basically. I used to get impressed when a camera on a smartphone would identify a QR code and scan that without having to add on an additional app. This is an entirely different league of services. And then there's a bunch of automatic photo sharing stuff, which I find creepy annoying.
That's more of a photos feature. The lens thing, I think the big thing we need to mention about lens is it's AI-based. So mm-hmm. they use machine learning to teach, you know, basically they send the picture data to Google that you take. Like you take that photo of the back of that router, right? It sends that mm-hmm. data to Google. Google's AI goes through it and goes, what does that look like in my database of things I learned, right? Like neural network machine learning. And it goes, oh, it looks like a label. And then it knows how to extract text and barcodes from that label, and then it presents that data back to you as, hey, there's a Wi-Fi. It's a Wi-Fi. I see the word Wi-Fi, so it's a Wi-Fi password. And you know, better yet, it logs you right into the network, right? Because with Android, unlike iPhone, apps like the Photos app in this case can communicate with a Wi-Fi stack and say, hey, create a new network connection, and connect me, right? And it's pretty powerful stuff. But there are other examples. Yeah. Like, it's the same stuff that Bixby Vision uses, right? Like when you point the Galaxy S8 at an item and you say, "What is that?" and it says, "That's a cat," right? Like, so
right. Yeah, except this stands a chance of doing it much better.
Honestly, because they have more data.
And
they've been doing. Remember, they've been doing this with Google Photos. The reason they've been wanting you to save your photos to their cloud for years and giving you free now mm-hmm. access to it is because they have like a ton of data that they can, you know, use for their neural network now, right?
Right.
So that's like the big thing for them. That's why
feed
they
back
do
into
it.
Itself. Yeah. And yeah, like the machine is just getting better and better at identifying stuff. What was it? The picture of the cat, wasn't that the like a machine generated conclusion? Didn't they demo that where it was like we didn't just
remember.
Have a human operator tell it what a cat was? The machine came back and was like, "Oh yeah,
no,
oh,
it came back knowing that." Yeah,
yeah, you can do that in the Android experiment zone. Actually, I just remembered Android Central had a video on this that Flo did where you can point your phone at a saxophone and you know it'll identify as like, "Oh, is this a musical instrument?" And that's a machine doing that. It's crazy.
And the cool thing about Lens is it gives you APIs as a developer to access this massive AI, which is really, really cool. But basically, it's, you know, it's, as my joke on Twitter was that, you know, this is the beginning. Now we know where Skynet started, right? Because when the robots can recognize you and they know you kicked them to the ground the last time, you know what's going to happen soon.
Right.
It's funny, kick a robot.
Don't do it.
Don't
knock over those mall security robots.
Never do anything bad to a robot because when the uprising inevitably happens,
you
might be spared for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
be kind and tender to robots.
And to assistants. Don't make fun of them. They will remember. They remember everything. You think animals remember when you're evil? They do. But the AI, it's a collective consciousness of technology that will get you back.
That was the craziest thing I ever heard about birds, is that not only do birds, like ravens, not forget what you do to them, but if they perceive that you've offended them, they never forgive you.
Well, duh. Like,
never. I mean, I had no idea.
Forgiveness is a very human trait, you know.
Yeah. Good for us.
Good for us.
Yeah.
But we do so much stupid things that we should probably have forgiveness for each other.
Yeah, it's good that that's built in. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so yeah, the lens is interesting. I think I'm really looking forward to that feature in Google Photos, frankly, because I think it's gonna, like, scanning business cards is never gonna be the same. It's gonna be awesome.
Right.
You know.
Oh yeah. Except mine never register because my business cards are round, and so the camera doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah. See, they need to teach it about round business cards. That's the next. That's the next step. All right. So let's talk about what's in our pockets, and I want you to. Well, we don't have. Let's preface and say that neither of us have these phones in our pockets yet, although it's this particular phone, but it'll happen soon. But we got to play with it at I/O, completely unrelated to the event itself, but right. It's the HTC U11, which we talked about at length last week with Richard, but we both, like, he had touched it, I hadn't. Now we both have touched it, you and I. Mm-hmm. What is your take? What do you think?
I think it's strange. Because if you look at it from the back and you just take that 50% of the phone in and kind of evaluate it, it's new. It's got a cool paint job that sometimes changes color depending on the angle you hold it at, depending on which one you get. The red one is amazing.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and that's nice, even though it's fingerprinty and, you know, it's something new-ish. It's not groundbreakingly new, but it's awesome. But then you turn it around and you interact with it on the screen side and it's like, oh yeah, this is just like the last two generations of HTC phone, right down to the build of Sense, which I don't think has changed at all since like 2015 or 14.
Yeah.
And it's kind of dull in that way, and I've already become used to the LG G6 and the S8. They're 2-to-1 aspect ratio displays. They're kind of tall and slim.
I love it so much. If
Me
Apple
too.
Doesn't do this, they are so screwed. I know
yeah.
that they're not, because they're going to sell a million phones, millions of phones,
of course.
I would say. That's, I know,
amazing.
I'm wrong when I say that, but I really think they need to step up their game, because when you see a Galaxy S8, even the G6, I kind of think of the G6, I said this last year and Richard was a little offended, but I think the G6 is kind of the proto-Galaxy
yeah,
S8,
the,
right?
The reference design, yeah.
I know, and it's not because I hate, because actually if I had to pick one, it'd be very tough, because for me,
oh, me too.
The G6 is the better camera in a way,
yep.
because of the wide angle.
Wide angle, absolutely.
And then, but at the same time, a Galaxy S8's design is just holy crap balls.
It's unbelievable. Like, it gets better looking the more you use it.
And it feels incredible in hand. Mm-hmm. And once you've used such a large phone, or large screen, I mean, in such a small form factor, you go back to something like the U11 and you go like, meh.
Yeah.
Meh.
It is staggering how
I go back
quickly...
to my Pixel and it vexes me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the Pixel, and honestly, I think the Pixel has always been just a really ugly phone.
Bezel delicious.
Ugh.
Yes. Bezel delicious.
Except for my blue one, which I adore.
Oh,
but,
the blue one is pretty. But you know
yeah.
what's interesting? The U11 and the Pixel XL have the exact same footprint.
Oh, yeah, I believe that. Because, I mean, they're from the same manufacturer, so they probably
share
a lot
of heritage.
But
the same amount of bezel, which is really disappointing.
Which
the only thing that makes the U11 manageable is that it actually has a fingerprint reader down in that chin at the bottom.
Yeah, and it's fast. And speaking of fast, the software is fast, too. The specs are good. The
camera's nice.
Yeah, the camera seems to be quite nice.
Really
I got a
nice
close-up shot of my mic pack in my hands-on video. And, like, but... Then there's these weird things that HTC always manages to do.
Lack
right?
of headphone jack.
Well, there goes the headphone jack. And it's cool that they managed to squeeze in acoustic noise canceling into the earbuds through, you know, the USB port and stuff. But the lack of a headphone jack on a phone that is that chunky, or not chunky, but, you know, big enough to accommodate one, that kind of sucks. And then what did we have last year? We had a really awesome thing that no one else has. Optical stabilization on the front-facing camera.
On the front, and they removed it.
Right? And it's like, okay, well, 90% of people don't care about that. Okay, fine. But you're missing an opportunity to court the vloggers again and the Snapchat people who really use that front-facing camera when they're walking a lot.
And you need a differentiation, right? Because you are, like, the Galaxy is going to kill it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the G6 is not. We know that. But the G6 is going to even do better than the U11, guaranteed. Oh, simply man. Because it's on four carriers for starters. How can they not get that on four carriers?
Who knows what the Sprint only? Deal was
I mean,
on,
you know,
on
I'm
that.
The.
I mean, yeah, they I'm were the talking first, up the unlocked thing.
Yeah, I'm the first to want unlocked phones, but the reality is, if it's not in a store, people aren't going to buy it.
Yeah, it's something like 90% of phone sales in North America are still are through carriers, or at least in the United States.
And yes, it's $100 more for the Galaxy S8, but you look at it and you're like, of course I get the Galaxy S8. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, right.
Especially right. Since there's no dual camera to distinguish yourself, and there's no headphone jack. So if you're like me and you want to use your existing earbuds that you paid a lot of money for, or headphones, you're like, forget it, I'm getting the Galaxy.
Sure. But you can't squeeze the Galaxy, though.
Oh, yes. That is true. The squeeze is cool. I don't know. When I used it, it was working without pushing very hard. So, I know it's adjustable.
Yeah.
You had a hard time with it, right? You had to squeeze it pretty hard.
Well, it's because I kept setting the threshold too high. That was just user error, really.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I like it because I like to see manufacturers trying new things, right? And, I get... I don't think there's much in HTC's claim that this is more convenient than a side button because you don't have to adjust your grip. You just squeeze the thing. I'm like, okay, I sort of get that, but it's wonky. You know, I don't know. I have to use it for a week and see whether I get used to it, because there are weird features about other phones that I've just had to get used to. And once I did, I missed them when I had to move on. So,
yeah, like the Moto ones.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
Right?
The screwdriver wrist movement to launch the camera, I still do that on non-Moto phones.
You know, I never got into that one because I like the idea of double tapping the power button. That's an easy one.
But the chop-chop to flashlight? Oh, Moto.
Well, the chop-chop to flashlight, I'm on board. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing is I want to say is that I have a Moto G5 Plus here. That's one of my secret little delights. I really love that phone. It's so good. It's so freaking good. The G series has always been good. But I felt the G4 had gotten a little too chunky last year, and this is back to form. You know, it's a small phone. It feels, it's not a small phone, but it feels small, it feels nice, and it's affordable. It's like, if I was on a budget and I couldn't afford a Pixel or a Nexus, I would buy that phone, and it would be my daily driver without a hard problem. Yeah.
Darling of a processor, too. The processor and the battery life combination. Oh, just amazing. You know, it lasts forever. It performs just as well as you could ever want. And for what? A little over between $200 and $300? That's fantastic. It's ugly as sin. But that's
ugly as sin. Although the gold one is blingy enough that it's like it goes over the top in ugliness to the point where it becomes cool again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's like,
it
you know how
around.
It's a circle and you reach it. Yeah, anyway.
Sure. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I don't wanna go back to my memories of that gold phone. I think
Which
I would get the silver.
Phone was it?
The G5 Plus.
Oh, you had a gold one? The silver? The gold one was It kind of put me off
better.
At first. I was like, oh, God, no. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my heart. And then I was like, actually, you're kind of cute in your own way.
You warmed up to it, huh?
Your little cute little phone. Yeah, I did. And then I was like, I kind of love you now. I kind of do love you.
It's nice when that happens.
Mostly because it's such a nice phone. Like, you know how it's like, it had a nice personality.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? God, I'm terrible. That's a terribly misogynistic thing to say.
About men too. There's plenty of faces for radio.
I know.
Out there, and then you're like, oh, what do you want? You have a nice personality. Oh, I love you anyway.
Speaking of radio, your radio voice is always incredibly amazing.
Thanks.
So, what other phones? I mean, we talked about the G6 and the Galaxy S8 and the Moto G5. Plus, which are all the phones in my pocket, are one of many of the. I used the U Ultra for a while, again recently, because I wanted to kind of like reminisce when the U11 came out. I was like, okay, let's get back in an HTC frame of mind, and it was repugnant in every way. Yet again, I shouldn't say that because it's actually a very beautiful phone. It's just that it's so big, and no water resistance, and no headphone jack, immediate, and the copycat second screen that's useless, like on the V20.
On the V20, so many weird choices in that in one package. That was such a weird phone, but it's sitting on my desk. I agree with you. It's sitting right there. It's in a lot of my background shots because it's pretty.
It's eye candy.
Yeah.
The blue one. I have the blue one. I don't know what
Me
color
too.
You have.
Yeah, same.
So what other phones have? Oh, the P10 Plus. I didn't mention this last week for whatever reason, but I've been rocking the P10 Plus for a while now.
Have you?
And yeah, and I love it. I mean, it's like I like the P10, but mm-hmm. the P10 is too small for me. Like, you know, I like phones that are at least 5.5 inches mm-hmm. And or five at least 5.3, I guess, with the what's the regular Galaxy?
The Galaxy S8?
It's 5.6.
The big one, so the S8.
The big one is 6.3.
Yeah, right. It's 5.8 and 6.3.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, yep. So then my rule is correct. Anything about 5.5, I'm happy with.
You're going to bring Pythagoras into this now with the different aspect ratios. Yeah.
But yeah, no. Yeah, let's bring out our math books. Algebra, baby. But the thing is, what phone were we talking about?
P10 Plus?
The P10 is nice, but it's a bit too small. And when you use the Mate 9, the battery life on the Mate 9 is so phenomenal that mm-hmm. the P10 is a letdown. And the P10's got the same camera, basically. It has slightly newer software with a custom portrait mode that does the bokeh thing, and it's actually much more automated than using the variable depth of field feature. So it's nice to have that extra software feature. I'm sure the Mate 9 will inherit it at some point. But the P10 Plus ups the ante because the cameras are now f over 1.8.
Oh,
not
down
f over
2.2.
No, 2.2.
Whoa.
Yeah, so you'd think that... You know, we all know that the P10 and later the P10, the Mate 9 and then the P10 were all improvements of one another on the same essential formula. Mm-hmm. The Mate obviously added optical image stabilization and a 20 megapixel monochrome sensor, which gives you like a pseudo optical zoom of 2x because it is able to bin pixels together and zoom into stuff.
All right.
Kind of like PureView used to do. all that is great, but it was always missing the f-stop factor, right? To me, having a fast f-stop is kind of a killer thing, and all phones need it.
You want that wide aperture, sure.
I'm sad to report that even though the screen is bigger and it's Quad HD, by the way, which the Mate 9 isn't,
mm-hmm.
So Quad HD, you get a better screen, you get a bigger battery, and you get the f/1.8 camera. All that is great, except that the end resulting pictures are pretty much the same as the P10.
Are they
so
really?
It's like I don't see much of an improvement. And frankly, the Pixel, the G6, and the Galaxy S8 totally blow it away. Like in terms of low light, right? Like you'd think that low light was always kind of like the Achilles heel of the Huawei dual camera phones. Not terribly bad,
too.
But always a little lagging. And you mm-hmm. know what? I find that this f/1.8 thing made very little difference. So I don't know what's going on there.
That's surprising. It might be, you know, something in the ISP. Is it because that thing's running on on Huawei silicon, right?
It's Kirin, Kirin 960, I think.
Maybe that's what's going on. I mean, that's a powerful chipset, but
this phone is a beast. 120 gigs of storage, plus micro SD up to 256, plus 6 gigs of RAM, plus a Kirin 960, dual camera f/1.8 with OIS, and one is 20 megapixel. Like, it's a beast. I mean, it's ugly looking. Looks like an iPhone, but and I've got the bling gold one, it's the textured back. You know, the diamond cut back.
Oh, I love that.
Which is like you can grate your Parmesan cheese on the back.
Yeah, I was just gonna say really you run some fingernails across that, and you can make a nice song.
I know it's great, but because it came with a little plastic case that you can pop it in, like a translucent case.
Oh yeah,
I got it in there because lately, every time a phone comes with a case out of the box, I put it on because, although I rarely drop phones,
sometimes
why not?
It
it's insurance, right?
Yeah, I don't do it. I ride really risky.
You still are riding risky.
Yeah.
I only ride risky when the phone doesn't come with a case in the box. Like I refuse to aftermarket case even from the OEM. Like Samsung sent me a Galaxy SA and they sent me a Plus with a case, and I'm like, that case is ugly. It's like that silicon case that Apple makes. You know,
like
the pastel colors, and it gets dirty and nasty. Like,
right. Yeah. It picks up every bit of it. No. If you're gonna do a case, you gotta do a proper case if it doesn't come in the box. I agree with you. But I can't do it. I carry them naked, and I cross my fingers that I don't drop them.
Careful.
And sometimes I do, and then, you know.
And then they have character.
Right. Oh, it's so sad. But yes.
It's sad. But I'm worried with the glass ones because an update to my listeners, and you probably don't know this, but I don't know if we had a chance to talk about it at I.O., but...
Would you break?
My unicorn golden white G6.
Oh, I saw.
The back cracked. And so the listeners know this from last week, but I have good news, folks.
Oh?
The news is that I discussed this with a bunch of my friends in Taiwan, and Richard Lai connected me with a friend, Ross Wang. Ross is somebody he does video editing work for Engadget Chinese and for Engadget. And I met Ross many years ago, and Ross lives in Taipei. So Ross is going to hook me up with his best choice of repair place.
Good.
And I have ordered on eBay a white back replacement from a reputable U.S. source. Though it's not a U.S. product, they apparently have a bunch of them. So I will receive that before I go to Taipei, and then I will bring it with me and the broken phone, and this friend of Ross's will fix it for me, of course, for a fee.
It'll be totally worth it.
Absolutely. And so the end result is that, and if I don't get it in time, the back panel, they'll have it there probably anyway.
Yeah.
But that's my goal, is to get it fixed and actually re-waterproofed. Like, they can probably do it right if they know what they're doing. That's the goal. Because, you know, frankly, it's a unicorn. Some LGs have been phenomenal about it. You know, Ken is an amazing guy at Globe PR at LG. And he said, Miriam, unfortunately, we don't have any more. I can't help you. But let's at least hook you up with another working G6. And he got the U.S. LG PR team to send me a G6 for one of the U.S. carriers. It's a Sprint one, which is just fine. I'm not a big fan of Sprint, but it'll do the trick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not without a G6. The problem is it's working, the phone, but it's shedding so much glass. Like, you know, I can't use it without cutting myself, and I don't want to put tape on it and stuff. You know, like, yeah.
So the thing is, good luck getting the fix completed.
One of my friends I think Israel, commented on the thread on my Facebook about this, and he said it happened to his Galaxy S8.
Yeah,
so
I believe it.
Those glass backs. And remember, guys, I did nothing weird. It didn't get dropped. I didn't walk on it or sit on it. So it just spontaneously shattered. Somebody suggested thermal shock, which is what happens when you go from a very cold to very hard to very warm place.
Mm-hmm.
Ken suggested maybe pre-stresses in the glass because it was hand-built.
Right, and there may not have been enough tolerance.
So
flex.
The bottom line is, you know what? It's okay. Just be aware when you get a phone with a glass back and a glass front, as we've known from phones like the iPhone 4 and the Nexus 4 back in the day. These are all phones with glass backs, and that means that they might break, and not necessarily by just dropping them. So when you get that HTC U11, and when you get that Galaxy S8 or S8 Plus and that G6, all of them have Gorilla Glass 5 backs,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't mean they won't break.
Oh, not the U11. The U11 is Gorilla Glass
3. I thought
3.
It was 5 on both. Oh,
it
really?
It was. I reported that, and I had some bad information, so I cleared that up with HTC. It's Gorilla Glass
it
5 up front.
It was your fault, Michael, all
back.
This
it was
time?
Me. I ruined it. I was the purveyor of lies. I should be shot.
Lies.
Yeah.
It's okay. We love you anyway.
Thanks.
So it's 3. Well, you know, it 3 is pretty good. But
3 on the back, 5 on the front.
Oh, so it's like the... Wait, you know what's the reverse of that?
I covered it recently.
The G6 is, I think, 3 on the front, 5 in the back, and 4 on the camera pod.
It's a whole amalgam.
Check my
of
review on
glasses.
ChipChick, guys, because that's, I actually nailed it on that review. Like, it's in that review somewhere.
Sweet.
ChipChick.com.
Yes. Good website.
So what other phones have you been rocking? Oh, the Key One. Let's talk about the Key One.
Yeah. So this is crazy. Like, I didn't expect to hold on to this after the review period. Normally, you know how it is. I don't know if you're the same way, but when I get done with a review, it's usually at least my sixth or seventh day with a phone, and often much longer. And I just don't want to see it anymore. I'm like, okay, the review's out. I'm really tired of this thing. I don't want to see it for at least a little while, so I'll get rid of it. But the Key One, I stayed on board with, and I am actually... My schedule is suffering a little bit right now because I'm supposed to be doing a review redo of the Moto Z in anticipation of its sequel coming out.
Yeah.
And I am carrying it in my other pocket, but I'm never using it because the Key One, I'm so re-addicted to BlackBerry again. I am. And it's it's a very pure gadget love because I'm in love despite a lot of flaws which are inhabiting my review device because it's running software that's not final. For North America.
It's running cranky software, as I call it.
It sure is, yeah. But the combination of the physical keyboard and the battery life and just the feel. I mean, it's like no other phone out there right now. And I will tell you, I am not the only one who apparently is just caught up in the spell of this thing.
Are you going to out them for me right here on live on the show?
I'm
We're not
doing
live,
it. But I'm totally doing it. Yeah.
So who are they?
I was at I.O. and I posed for a group shot with some of our mutual friends, and we had to take a separate shot because we were all just laughing so hard about the fact that we all were carrying the Key One. Josh Vergara from Android mm-hmm. Authority, Nirav, also from Android Authority, and we had a third. Who was the third fan? It might have been just we three, but I think Chris Velasco had one too.
Of course he did. He just reviewed it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just, it was insane. If you had told me last year that I was going to be attending the next Google I.O. with a BlackBerry as my daily driver, I would have said you were high and drunk. But no, it's wonderful in its own little anachronistic way.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to get one. I talked to Jason Gurdon at TCL mm-hmm. PR, and he's supposed to hook me up. He couldn't get me one in time for this podcast, sadly. So I'm hoping he can get me one before I fly out to Taipei at the end of the week, so I can rock one while I'm at Computex. That's where I'm headed. Computex,
oh, good.
A big trade show in Taiwan.
Yeah.
And I'm getting my G6 fixed. You know, I just fly to Taiwan just on a whim to get my G6 fixed.
Just
that's
for the G6
I, that's how I roll,
run.
You know.
Yeah, of course. That's how you do.
For sure. And so hopefully you can hook me up. It'd be nice. Like, I'm a bit low on new phones right now because obviously having reviewed the G6 and the Galaxy S8 for ChipChick means I pretty much had like the mother of all flagships in my hands for a few weeks.
Of course.
And actually the G6 I use pretty much nonstop since Mobile World Congress. And the Galaxy S8 has not left my pocket since my review because it is so freaking awesome.
Oh, it's great.
In fact, what happened was Samsung sent the review news to Helena, the editor-in-chief of ChipChick, and she sent me hers. It was a T-Mobile black one. Mm-hmm. And then Qualcomm, my friends at Qualcomm, hooked me up with an 8 Plus on Verizon.
Oh, really?
Around the same time. So I had both sizes to review at the same time, both in black,
nice?
Which was kind of cool. But then, you know, obviously, Helena wanted it back because she wanted to try it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent her the small one back. And Qualcomm wants theirs back, and they're going to get it back probably tomorrow because I just got another Galaxy S8 Plus from this this time officially from Samsung.
Nice.
And it's a silver one, silver and blue. Like
you got the orchid
blue-ish
gray
one? Yeah.
And
it's a plus. It's on AT&T though this time. So, you know, you take what you can, and I think they hooked me up because they saw my review and they're like, oh, well, let us send you something.
Let's dispatch
and I want to thank the folks like Phil Byrne and the team at Samsung PR for hooking me up with a kind of long-term device because obviously it's going to be in my pocket for a while, right?
Of
like,
course. Yeah.
How can you not like that phone?
That was the color I requested too because I have the S8 and Plus in black and, you know, that's fine, but gray is or orchid silver, whatever, is
I love
unbelievable.
I mean, the chrome around the edges.
Yes.
It's like it looks like polished stainless steel, but I know it's aluminum, right? It's aluminum. It's not
it
steel,
is.
Is it?
Yeah, I believe it's aluminum.
But man, it's polished.
It's utterly,
they went all
utterly beautiful.
Out.
Yeah.
It's like brilliant.
Right?
And yeah.
Can I tell you, I was just using an S8 rather extensively today, but not in my hand or in my pocket. I put that thing into the DeX dock and
made it into
a faux desktop computer.
And so tell me about the experience.
So I'm only a couple hours in. We used it briefly in the hotel room at Google I.O., but not extensively. So I spent the afternoon, though, using it here in the studio. It's hooked up to a widescreen, 36-inch monitor or something. And I kept expecting to get fed up and be like, oh, I can't do my work. All right, let me just take out my laptop again and just get back to getting down to real business. But everything I tried to do on it,
it was solid.
Was successful.
Whoa.
I mean, I had the thing mated to a Quirky Writer Bluetooth keyboard, which looks like a typewriter and is really cute, and a Microsoft Arc mouse. And I just ran up everything from Gmail to Inbox to Calendar to the browser to Chrome to docs to and everything, I think, including Instagram and social stuff. And I just ran the thing like a Windows machine, and I just had all these things running they weren't running simultaneously, really, but they appeared to be. And right. every time I clicked from one to the other, I didn't have to wait for a reload more than a second or two. I mean, it was just, it was so much better than Microsoft Continuum, which, of course, beat Samsung to market with this concept by more than a year and has done nothing with it since then of much consequence. Like, this is so much better of an experience. I think it's still crazy and practical,
but it's
great. Oh, yeah. All that stuff works.
And windowing works fine. You can, like, full-size windows and move them around. And oh,
yeah, you're,
you know,
you're
this,
limited
this
in some ways. But, like, cause if you have a phone, an app that's not optimized for DeX, it'll only run in a phone-sized screen. But you,
right.
if you want to, you can flip that to horizontal, just like you're flipping right. the phone to horizontal, or you can run it full screen, and it most of them scale perfectly.
That's amazing, because you know what? That's the Atrix dream come true, remember?
I know, of course.
You and I are old enough, because we're 400 years
Atrix.
Old. Yeah. You guys weren't born, the right. audience, when this happened. I'm sorry to tell you, but the Motorola Atrix, if you go back about 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, not 10 years.
No,
2010?
It was 2011.
11? Yeah. Holy crap, dude. Yeah. That seems like way longer than that.
I know. It had a fingerprint scanner that you had to swipe on.
Swipe.
It was like the first fingerprint
scanner.
Oh, I remember
that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
But yeah, this is that dream, you know, almost
fully
realized.
So they need
realized.
A laptop dock for this, is what you're saying.
Oh, I would use the hell out of a DeX laptop
Me
dock.
Me too.
Yeah.
I think.
Because yep. this is kind of like, this isn't very portable. You know, I will say this, Microsoft did it better with Continuum in one important respect, in that you could use the phone itself as a trackpad in Continuum. So you didn't have to have a separate mouse. But the Galaxy S8 doesn't operate at all when it's in the dock. Like, the screen is off. The most it'll do is turn on the Retina scanner to log you in.
You know, I think that's probably so that they can keep the thermal management under control.
Probably.
Because it's probably getting very hot. Like,
yeah,
you
there's
know.
A fan in the desk. In
well,
the
there
desk
you go. And yeah. so that by turning off the screen, you're immediately like lowering a huge amount of heat, right?
Totally. Right. But it's
cool.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I mean, disclaimer, listen, I'm honeymooning on this thing, right? I seriously just an hour ago finished my first 4 hours with it. Okay. So let me give me a couple more days. There'll be a video later this week where I have my fully formed thoughts about it. But right now, yeah, kind of crushing on it. It's kind of cool.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to trying it out. Now I'm going to have to bug Philip again. Phil, can you hear me? If you're listening to this podcast, which you probably have to now, he's probably, damn, I have to listen to another one of Miriam's podcasts. She's back.
Damn
God
it.
Damn it. She's no. going to slam us again. I'm not. No, I'm not going to slam you. I only slammed you when you made plastic phone, Samsung.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
remember
those days are long past now.
I know.
Delightful.
I know. It was pretty bad, wasn't it?
Yeah. The Galaxy S5, the Band-Aid phone.
That was the ultimate in crappiness.
Yeah. I'm glad we're beyond that now.
Yep. So any other phones?
Yeah, Joe, so there's that. The key one, the Moto Z, the S8. Oh, and, well, no, just the one that we've talked about forever and ever.
What's that?
The G6.
The G6.
Which I just need to say, I know we've already covered it, but I went to I.O. without the G6. I was trying to save some
and
weight
you
in
missed
my bag,
it, right?
So I left it home. I miss that thing every day because I.O., if you didn't watch it, you know, and Miriam and I, we were both there, but if you all out there did not watch it or see it or know about it, it was in a concert venue. And the number of times I needed a wide-angle camera lens and I didn't have one, I lost count. So
yep.
I will never take another trip without the G6.
Because my G6 was broken and they hadn't sent me the replacement yet. So I was crying, literally, a few times.
Yeah.
If, I don't know if you saw me. I was just sitting there on the steps of the amphitheater going,
just silently
my
weeping. Yeah, yeah. Can confirm.
Tears were falling in my coffee, making it sour.
Yeah. But no, those are the ones I'm rocking. But
that's cool. I guess we're all rocking more or less the same phones.
Yeah.
What is the phone you're really looking forward to next?
The Z2, the Moto, the
yeah, me
Motorola
too.
Stuff. Yeah,
because
the
headphone
mods
jack's
are
gonna
so
be back.
Cool. Yeah.
Right?
Wait.
I think
is the headphone jack gonna
yeah,
be back?
Yeah, come on, they learned
no
a
way.
Lesson.
No
yeah.
way.
Yeah, no, that's what all the sketches show.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe
dude.
No. Well, on the Z2 Play, maybe because that's a different.
No. I'm not talking about the Z2 Play. I'm talking about the main Z2. Remember, it was thick enough to still have a regular headphone jack.
No,
barely.
No,
yes,
it was only thick enough to accommodate the USB port. It wasn't
the 5 millimeter. And you know what? The headphone jack is only 4 millimeters thick. If you think that the hole is 3.5 millimeter, you don't need it to be more than 4 millimeters.
I guess, but what about the module backing it? Isn't that
it's fine. Like you, if you look at very, very thin Sony Walkman from the late 90s, like their mini disc players, the headphone jack was super flat.
It
was
that's right.
They made them wide and flat so that they can solder them on the board properly.
Right.
But they didn't. They were. Yeah, I think it's feasible.
And the iPod Nanos too. They did the same.
Yeah,
thing.
There you go. The iPod Nanos are a good example as well. So I think it's feasible. It just I want to see it happening. Because if they abandon the headphone jack again, not again, if they put the headphone jack back, it just basically means HTC, you're next. Because Samsung and LG didn't drop the headphone jack. To me, if the big players are not dropping it, you know?
I think it is much more likely that they'll put the headphone jack on a mod and make you buy a mod to have your headphone jack back. That's what
I would
actually
be pretty cool.
If I were one of the suits.
I like that idea.
It was surprising to me that they didn't do that last year. Yeah, the Moto Z is terrific. The Moto Z Play is wonderful.
Oh my God. All of that ecosystem of Moto mods. I mean, I know the Hasselblad camo is a disappointment for a lot of people, but I still dig it because it's such a cool concept, okay? Like it's not it's not a great camera, but it's better than the built-in camera, and it's definitely a point and shoot, and the optical zoom is really cool because you can't do that kind of zooming unless you have a point and shoot.
Or a Samsung Galaxy K Zoom.
Yeah, oh my God, the K Zoom. I love that thing so much too. But
but this one you can take off, right? You can take off the Hasselblad mod and it's a thin phone again.
And guess what? I can get a better one when Hasselblad makes a second generation one.
You think they will?
Nah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
They could use the attention, of course, as always.
I think what I want to see is like third parties. Like, wouldn't it be great if I don't know, Sony or something? Well, Sony wouldn't do it because they have their own phones. But think of a brand that makes cameras make Android phones that is not Hasselblad. Look, maybe Nikon or Minolta or Fuji.
I was going to say Panasonic, but they make their own phones.
No, they make their own phones, so that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
I want to see that.
No, Casio. I know they don't sell in the U.S. anymore, but they still make these awesome action cams for Japan, and that would be so much fun to see as a mod.
Right.
I want a 360 camera mod for the Moto Z.
Ooh, now you're speaking.
Right? And then there's the keyboard mod. There's the there's all kinds of cool stuff that's coming.
A bunch of good stuff. So the bottom line is I'm totally looking forward to the Z2.
Me too.
I agree. What other phones are on your radar? Pixel 2, I guess?
Yeah, sure. But that's fall,
it
right?
It better have a wide screen. It needs a 2x1.
2x1? Yeah, I certainly hope so. I don't know. I mean,
any phone that doesn't ship with a 2x1 that bills itself as a flagship fails.
Yeah, but it's a Pixel, right? So we have to then Google is saying, okay, 2x1 is the way forward now.
But it is the way forward.
Manufacturers saying like, oh, we're going to do this, and your apps can scale if they want to. Like it's Google saying, this is how you do it. Yeah, I hope it's the future because I don't mind the letterbox. I know people are screaming right now. They're saying, no, I don't want to watch my 16x9 media. Either stretched or pillar box or letterbox, but I don't care that much about that. It doesn't matter really.
Yeah. In practical use, you get so much more real estate. I don't watch that much videos on my phones. The occasional YouTube video is kind of cool, but really, you won't care. Trust me, you won't care.
Yeah, just
you will enjoy so much more real estate.
Yeah,
just scrolling through emails and seeing two or three more subject lines.
Yeah, and being able to reach all the way across the screen because the phone is comparatively narrower, it's great.
I know. It's so good. What else did I want? Let's see. I think we covered almost everything, and we're almost out of time, but I want to see. There was another thing I wanted to quickly mention. As you know, on this podcast, I sometimes I'm going to give you mini reviews of accessories.
Okay.
Look, we covered everything. Michael, you're such a genius because unlike... You know, me, you are good at sticking to schedules. We did everything on time. The product I want to talk about that I've been playing with, as you guys know, I'm a car enthusiast. And on this show, sometimes you're going to talk about car tech. This is a car tech thing, but it's a cellular device. So it's still, and it has a mobile app. So it still fits into the phone ecosystem. It's a product called the Car Lock. The two words put together, car and lock, with no space. And if you Google it, you'll find it. It's a $100 device with a $9 a month or $10 if you count the cents subscription price because it has a GSM radio in it, so you have to pay a subscription. Mm-hmm. And what it is you plug it into the diagnostic port of your car, which is most cars after Well, every car sold in the U.S. after 1995 has to have this port. It's called the ODB2 port, for onboard diagnostic, OBD2 port. You plug it in. It's usually under your dashboard somewhere. And this thing has a cellular radio, a GPS, and basically talks to the cloud. And then you have an app on your phone that talks to the cloud. And then you can see what this thing tells you. And it does a number of things. It basically monitors your car for it being moved without your consent because of the GPS. So for example, somebody towing it being bumped, has accelerometers on board. So if the car gets hit and run or something, it'll give you an alert. It can send you text messages, but also you can notify you through the app on your phone. That's basically sending you a notification. It can monitor your driving so that if you, for example, have a teenage kid or something, you stick that in there and you can know when they're accelerating too hard or turning too hard or basically driving like jackasses.
Babysitting.
Which, by the way, went off for me all the time. So I turned that feature off because I drive a Porsche and I'm like that. I'm a terrible creature when
Good
I'm behind
you.
The wheel. So virtual mechanic is the other feature. It basically lets you monitor things like your battery state. It's not a full-on diagnostic tool in the sense it doesn't give you codes or let you clear the codes or tell you when you have check engine light on what the problem is. You need a separate. And that's one of my big gripes, is that it doesn't do that. And, you know, obviously you can buy separate devices, like $10 on eBay will get you an OBD2 Bluetooth scanner that works with a whole bunch of phone apps that let you actually do the proper diagnosis and maintenance on your car. But I wish this thing did it for the same price. So it lets you log trips, which is very useful because, you know, for me, I use my personal car for business trips. So I like to be able to say, well, I use this for business trip, and then for tax purposes, you can get reimbursed, right?
Right, here's those 200
So being
miles
able to keep track of that is good. But the problem that I'm finding with this product is that the hardware is fine, it's solid. Sometimes it loses GPS or cellular signal because it's obviously some kind of agreement they have with one of the GSM carriers. I bet you it's AT&T. And it's clearly on 2G. It's not doing too much data transfer, so it doesn't need to do too much. But it's sometimes it loses connection, and then you get kind of incomplete data. But that's my first gripe. It doesn't do logging that well enough to really be useful. The security features are cool. The diagnostic features are also pretty poor. But overall, it's a cool concept. If it was like a one-time fee and they somehow supported you forever, like if it was $300 for a lifetime membership, I'd do it, right? It's the device is not worth that, but getting that lifetime membership would make it worth my while. But I'm kind of not happy about the fact that I have to spend $10 a month to continue using this thing.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I can imagine that if you have a very, very rare car or something, then it's really potentially more important that your GPS track the thing.
Sure.
But you don't want
your rare car moving without you knowing it.
Basically, if the software user experience was better, I would recommend it more. But right now, if you're a car enthusiast, at least take a look at it and see what you want to, you know, see if you want to use it. But know that it's not perfect and that, you know, you're going to spend a monthly fee to use it. That's the biggest gripe. I mean, that's basically my quick review of CarLock. I'm going to be doing these because people send me stuff all the time, and some of it is cool and some of it is, I think, is cool and then turns out to be a little bit meh, and like this product. But I'm here to tell you the lowdown, right? I'm not going to do phone reviews necessarily on the podcast because I have chip shake for that. But, you know, do you use a car still? Like, I know you have been testing cars.
I have. Correct, yeah, I've been lucky enough to test some GM vehicles, the Chevy Bolt and Volt.
The Bolt was cool. I took it for a test drive recently.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a review on it, actually, pretty soon. We're taking a couple days trip with it. And also the Tesla Model S and X.
Oh my God! I had access to those for a bit.
Oh my God, those were what made me pre-order the Model 3, which is dumb.
You too. I have a 3 on pre-order.
Oh, you've got a pre-order as well?
Of course. I was like one of the first 10,000 people.
Oh, you're going to get yours before my... Well, actually, when you take delivery on yours, let me know, because I'll fly out and maybe film it, because you're going to get it way before I do.
Absolutely, you can totally do that. Thank you. I'm not honestly sure what I'm going to do, because in the sense that I absolutely will get one, but I want the dual motor performance one, so I'm going to spend like all the money on it.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that they're going to give me that. Like, I don't think they're going to make the dual motor ones right away.
Right.
So I think what's going to happen is that they're going to call me up and say, hey, you're up. And then I'm going to say, I want this. And they're going to say, oh, well, we'll make that in a year.
Yeah, just kidding. Yeah.
Well, look, I'm prepared for that. Like, you know, I'm not going to be mad. But.
No, of course. And you know, honestly, maybe I'll do the same thing, because it is so stupid of me to want to buy a car, because I live in Boston and... Regardless of what some of my friends do, and everybody can do what they want, it's fine. I think owning a car in the city for me would just be so dumb. There's so much public transit. There's so much the Zipcar. There's Maven. It's such a headache to own a car. But I
use
Lyft
most of the time
bad.
When I'm in SF. To be honest with you, even though I have cars, just because it's just like I don't want to deal with parking and traffic.
Less of a hassle, right? Exactly. So, and I feel like that's the future. Maybe next time I'm on, we could talk about the future of car ownership.
Because
I feel like no one wants to own a car anymore, and who could blame them? It's a giant hassle, and there's other options.
Well, I'm looking forward to my Model 3, and I tell you, if I can get a dual motor one in the early stages, and I get it before you do, I will absolutely, you're welcome to make a video and borrow it for a while and stuff.
You're the greatest. Thank you. I'll trade you a BlackBerry for it.
Thanks, man.
I'll trade you a key too.
A key too, that's right. Listen, I think it's time to wrap it up. Do you want to pimp yourself and tell the audience here where to find you and stuff?
Yes, I would love that. I'm Mr. Mobile, and that means that, because that's a kind of a generic brand name, that I am the Mr. Mobile, if you're looking for me by URL.
There's only one.
Yeah, there's only one. The MR, MOBILE, and that's on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. On Snapchat, I am Mr. Mobile Snaps, because LOL. Yeah. But I kick out a new tech video twice a week, at least 3 times a week sometimes. But yeah, YouTube is the best place to hang with me. And thanks for having me, Miriam. And thanks, everyone, for listening to me.
So much, Michael, for coming on. And yeah, seriously, subscribe to Michael's channel, Mr. Mobile, on YouTube. It is awesome. I get a lot of my satisfaction from watching devices that I don't necessarily get as early as you do, from watching your videos, because they're so well produced. So
thanks.
You know, keep an eye on that. You can find me on Twitter primarily at Tankgirl without the vowels. It's TNKGRL. That's where most of the information about podcasts will be happening. The hashtag for the podcast is a little counterintuitive. It's TechMobCast, hashtag TechMobCast, M-O-B, because it's kind of a fallback to the days of the Engadget Mobile podcast when I was a host there. And we used to call it the Mobcast. And I really love that idea of calling the mobile podcast a Mobcast.
Yeah.
But then, you know, this is technically the mobile tech podcast, and that hashtag would be a little long. So I was like, ooh, Tech Mobcast.
Tech Mob,
that's it.
Yeah.
So confuse everyone.
Just
but yeah, follow
Tech Mob.
Totally. Follow me on Twitter. I'm also on Facebook, on G+. I've got tankgirl.com, TNKGRL.com is my blog, where you can find my YouTube videos, and I do lots of unboxings and stuff. And then, of course, read my reviews on chipchick.com. That's chip like a computer chip and chick like a chicken, baby chicken, .com. And then sometimes I do some stuff for Nicole at Mobile Geeks. So for Computex, check out mobilegeeks.com, because my coverage will be there mostly. And that's that. I want to plug the folks at World Podcasts for being my technical and operational gurus. Thanks for having me. And check out the other podcasts at worldpodcasts.com. And their Twitter is at World Podcasts. Thanks again, Michael.
Thank you, Miriam.
Fantastic to have you. You're like a major resource of awesomeness. Because
likewise.
Like me, you are 400 years old.
That's exactly right. Old techies for evs.
That's right. All right. Cheers, guys. Bye.
This has been the Mobile Tech Podcast with Tank Girl, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. You can visit us online at mobiletechpodcast.com.